Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the motto of France is freedom, liberty, and fraternity. Many French would say that there is a major gap in the slogan of the country and reality on the ground for its people. This as the French National Assembly has passed a new security law giving police even more power. One of the most controversial parts of the law prohibits the sharing of images of police with the malicious intent. Now, critics say it is vague and can be used to stifle freedom and initiate a more severe crackdown. We're going to start off this discussion crossing over to Paris, joined by correspondent there, Chris DeHaan. Chris, well, fill us in on what this law could mean.
Well, concretely, this law means certainly a limitation of individual and public liberties. So the police impunity will increase, that's for sure. Police powers are increasing, that's for sure. Now it will be interesting to investigate the exact degree of the limitation of these freedoms, because France is still not a police state. There are still democratic institutions functioning, political parties, associations, trade unions are working, but it's not sure in what kind of degree, demonstrations, for instance, will be allowed in the near future. So it's certainly a limitation of public liberties, but we are not yet in a dictatorship.
And let me get our next guest in, too, on this independent journalist, if I have him out of Marseille, Sylvain Marcadia. Your take on this. In your opinion, why has the Macron government pushed for this? They were very aggressive in wanting to make sure this legislation gets passed.
Yes, it's a good question. Like, I really believe that the the party in power, Macron's party, La République En Marche, is trying to attract voters who would vote for the far-right party, Rassemblement National, headed by Marine Le Pen. So this move that is basically supporting the actions of the police, supporting the impunity of the police, is a move to attract these conservative votes in favor of Macron for the coming elections next year. So I do believe that this is one of the objectives. The other is also to reassure the police in a moment where it is becoming like a key element of the French institutions. Like the public opinion is more and more engaged against the government. We've seen the Yellow Vest movement erupting a few years ago, a few months after Macron was elected and after his first policies. And this is a way to support, reassure the police in their actions against these movements that are opposing the power, the party in power, I believe.
Okay, let me welcome my next guest out of Paris, journalist and geopolitical analyst, Gerard Coleman. Gerard, good to have you with us. Your take on exactly what this means now. I mean, has France transitioned? Is it leaning more and more to the right and just continually trying to limit individual freedom? Because we see this particular law, the security law. We also have seen the separation law. Your assessment of what is going on in general in the country?
Well, it's been leaning to financial rights since the 1960s. The Rothschild Bank took over, particularly in the 1970s. So the trajectory of French politics from the late 60s to now has been towards the extreme financial right. Socially, in terms of social mores, the regime in place is essentially a consequence of 1968. So that's what goes for the left today. I don't really know what you would call that in terms of right or left. But I think the reality is that we have a police state, and now they're giving police full powers. So we have a situation where drones, for example, can go into people's houses. Police can use drones. They did use them in the lockdown last year. They used drones in different parts of the country. But that caused controversy. I mean, a lot of people were opposed to the idea of being followed around by drones, police drones. Now it will give the police those kind of powers. We did see massive police brutality and repression during the Yellow Vest uprisings. We've seen massive police brutality right throughout the lockdown period over the last year. Just the other day in Paris, people were hunted out of parks and hunted out of the Seine area where people used to have picnics. People are not allowed to live effectively anymore in France, and that's not an exception, that's all over Europe. It is illegal to meet people, it is illegal pretty much to do anything other than go to work, wear a mask and so on and come home. So what it means is that it basically gives the police now the possibility of following you around with a drone, openly surveilling the whole population. And also, you know, private life is gone. They can legally go into your home if they have some suspicion about you. Now, suspicion about you might be that you're not wearing a mask in your home if they make that the next law, which they could, because they're pretty much most of the time now here, when you read the newspapers, every day a new law is being passed which takes away some other fundamental human liberty. So they spend most of their time discussing what liberty they're going to take away next. And so if you were to look at Paris now, particularly since the attacks in 2015-16, the series of terrorist attacks, it's police state, there's police everywhere. And, you know, if you compare it to so-called totalitarian countries, let's say like Iran, and I've been there many times, you don't see the same police concentration in the streets. This is a police state, and people of the police, if you ask here about the mask issue, for example, wearing masks in the street of Paris, I mean, some people believe in that and they comply, but a lot of people don't like being forced to do things. And most people I've spoken to said they wear them because they fear the police. So that you have a situation where people live in fear of the police all the time. Generally, the population in France is really very, very sick of fines. They get fined for living here.
Okay.
Speeding fines, with the sort of Internet of Things coming in, everything is being surveilled. So, you know, got sensors everywhere picking everything up. Now you're going to have biometric cameras. So, you know, that means essentially you're under surveillance all the time.
Stay with me, Gerard. Let me get Sylvain back in this discussion. Sylvain, you heard what Gerard was saying. Do you think that the majority of French people actually support these new security measures?
I don't think so. No, I really do not believe they do.
So why has the French Assembly? I mean, they're supposed to be representatives of the French people. Has happened that this legislation then has been passed?
Well, this probably has to do with like the French particularity in politics, that even though politicians get like elected and voted for, they seldomly respect their promises once they get into power. Macron was never elected to vote these laws. Actually, there are many parts of his program that he never applied or delayed. And he has used the COVID-19 crisis very conveniently for this. And this is basically, yes, like the reason why the Assembly managed to vote this law. And I generally also believe that the establishment, the political establishment that voted this law is afraid, has learned the lessons from the Yellow Vest movement, feared for the stability of their well-being and everything, and they are ready to ensure that the status quo, like the Fifth Republic as we are we call our institutions, are going to be maintained, and that actually have many issues that should be discussed in order to eventually come out of this system that is very vertical in terms of power, gives a lot of power to the president, and amongst other many other issues. But the representative system of France has issues that should be addressed instead of giving more rights to repress demonstrators and people opposing the police, which is actually a fundamental right to demonstrate. This is a right that's being denied little by little, as mentioned.
Okay, well, Gerard, where does the press fit in here? I mean, will they be able to show images from the scene of demos when police are involved, or where do you see things going from that perspective?
Well, the press is a system of state propaganda in all Western countries, and it's always been like that. So the press is the state, really. There isn't a separation. There is very little criticism allowed of state policy in the press. The press is there as a communication device of the state. So it's not going to affect the working of journalists, because they mostly publish fake news anyway. And the demonstrations that will be allowed, the demonstrations that will take place, will be demonstrations which are state-sponsored. So, for example, climate change demonstrations are given full support of the state, full support of the banks and the corporations. Gay pride is fully supported by the corporations and banks in the state. All these kinds of demonstrations will be promoted, but the real demonstrations will not be allowed, and we're going to see a criminalization of the type of Gilets Jaunes protests, the anti-mask protests, the anti-forced vaccine protests. There haven't been many in France in comparison to other countries, but this will make it more difficult for people with real issues, real life issues, to demonstrate. And the press doesn't cover those issues anyway, so they're not going to be concerned about the repression of the real dissidents in the country. We've just seen a dissident released from prison today. Hervé Vessel was put in prison because of his writings, and so now we have political prisoners in France, and we have more prison sentences, prominent dissident intellectuals, and that's the future. They're actually emptying a lot of the prisons. They're letting prisoners, actual criminals, go, and they're filling them with political dissidents. And that is the future right now.
Well, Sylvain, now officials say that the law is needed to protect law enforcement officers. Your take on that side of things, what do you think?
I'll use a quote from David Dufresne, who is a French journalist who has been writing extensively on the Yellow Vest movement and on issues of global security in France and freedom of speech. And he was calling this law Orwellian, even in its name, global security. What security are we talking about? Are we talking about the security of the citizens, or are we talking about the security and impunity of the law enforcement forces? So obviously there is an issue with these laws, and they are definitely not a move in favor of freedom of speech. They are actually a deterrent for independent journalists to engage in their work and to document the actions of the police. I mean, the issue here is police brutality. The issue is not security of police officers. There have been so many cases of police violence documented by citizens in the streets, and this is what the police and Gérard Darmanin, the Ministry of Interior, are trying to go against with this law that is basically giving this impunity and preventing citizens of doing their work, which is to report police violence and other actions during demonstrations.
Well, Gerard, we've also witnessed so many different laws. One of them is the separation law in France, where Muslims have been the target. I mean, we're just seeing more and more and more laws that seem to be weeding away the rights of the people in France. I'm just wondering about the French people in general. The French people have more of a love for independence and individual freedom. Why aren't we seeing more of a reaction? I mean, we have seen some demonstrations, but do you think that we're going to see increased outward show of being upset to this new law by the French people, or have they just learned to acquiesce and accept it?
Well, there's two points there. You mentioned the Muslims and then the, you know, the French love of liberty. And I think, one, on the Muslim issue, the police in France are highly integrated with the Israeli Defense Forces, Mossad, the even Israeli militia like Fatah, who are banned, are so extreme they're banned in Israel. They have links to the French police. So that would explain focus as well on Muslims, because the constant obsession about Muslims in France, the danger and so on, and then many very suspect terrorist attacks, and of course a catastrophic foreign policy. None of that is ever discussed in the debate. So that, you know, that is that explains why you have repression of the Muslim community. But on the other issue of the general love of liberty, well, it's a farce. You know, Republican liberty has been a farce from the very start, because it's not based on any solid philosophy. It's based on a false theory of the human being, and it's based on 18th century Enlightenment ideas, which are false ideas, and we're seeing the consequence of that now. When you get that kind of republic, eventually you have to pass laws against every fundamental liberty. So it makes a farce of the whole idea of liberty in the first place. And so we're seeing the collapse, essentially, of the principles of the French Revolution. But in the context where those principles are becoming the principles of a global government system. So, you know, France is part of a much wider agenda here. Europe, the world is going through the same process. There is a specificity in France, of course, which is the French love of liberty. But the we haven't seen any manifestation of that in the last year. If you compare France, for example, to Germany, millions of people have demonstrated against the lockdown in Germany. They demonstrated against the pseudoscience promoted by the media, and so on and so forth. There's been very little of that in France. So I think...
Why is that the case?
One of the reasons, I would say, is that the French were simply worn out from demonstrating with the Yellow Vest. I mean, you had the Yellow Vest movement just galvanized, it just, you know, mobilized thousands of people for, 2 years? It just went on and on and on and on. It went nowhere. And in a way, I think it sort of it exhausted an awful lot of people. And then after that, with the coronavirus, they were kind of taken by surprise. But I also think it's the French are very brilliant media propagandists, and they have a much more sophisticated propaganda system than any other country I know. They are very good at preventing, preempting counter arguments and preempting counter movements. They do it better than most of the countries. And over the last year, you compare the Anglophone media to the French media. French have been very good at sort of at basically dividing and conquering the French elites, that is. And I think that's one of the reasons they basically, you know, you have a far-right party, sort of called far-right party, which is in bed with the Zionists, is, you know, has not really had, you know, made any significant opposition to the Macron regime in the last year. Could have had many opportunities to come out and be the hero of the people, open everything up and put the bad guys in jail. Marine Le Pen is completely sold out. And we're seeing that with a lot of the far-right parties in Europe, so-called far-right parties, that they are basically going along with the technocratic agenda. And they're not coming out on the side of the people. So that's another reason that you have extreme manipulation on the right and on the left here. And, you know, that there's no coherent view of opposition that can unite the opposition to put an end to this. Because you have to see that a lot of these agendas are linked, you know, a police state giving police almost absolute powers, and then a lockdown situation, a medical dictatorship, forced vaccination, et cetera, et cetera. They're all linked. They're all part of the takeover of society by another. You know, we need to understand that that transcends class, race, and a lot of other issues that divide people. This is what is happening is that the wealthiest people in the world have taken over the world. They've taken over pretty much every state in the world. And, you know, France is an example of a country where they've done this to a very extreme extent, and they've managed to do it without much opposition until now. Because they have, they've been studying techniques of propaganda, I think, better than any other country.
Okay. And on that note, I'd like to thank My guests for being with us. We're out of time in this debate. Joining us in geopolitical analyst Gerald Coleman out of Paris and out of Marseille, independence journalist Sylvain Mercadier.
Thank you.
Thank you. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
آیت الله احمدی میانجی تو قم بود، از خوبان قم بود، خیلی سال پیش بود. من ازشون شنیدم، شما گفت یکی از رفقا من میشناختمش.
May Allah bless the soul of the late Ayatollah Ahmadi Miyanji. He was one of the great ulama in the city of Qom. Once he narrated me a story about how a sin can wash away all our belongings. He told me once there was a very rich man living in a wealthy neighborhood. During the days of month of Ramadan, a woman knocked on his door and asked for some rice for the food. The man not only did not give her the rice, but also insulted the needy woman. The woman felt contempt with all her soul and left the door.
از اون به بعد بود که ورق تو زندگی من برگشت. بدبیاری پشت بدبیاری، ضرر پشت ضرر.
Days passed and the wealthy man became poor and poor, and he knew that his destitute was because of the disrespect that he showed toward that needy woman. Now the point is that sins, even if small, have effects on our lives. Some of these sins are forgiven by our repentance. However, they have effects in our lives in this world. In other words, all sins have effects for both this world and the hereafter. Some of them are forgiven by Allah. But if by a sin you belittle someone and insult him, you must bear its consequences in this world too.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
The World with Reporters.
No one eats or drinks anything during the day. Restaurants and bakeries are all closed. This is not neither because of threats or the COVID-19 pandemic. What has created such an atmosphere across Afghanistan comes from a religious belief that prohibits Muslims from drinking and eating under the name of fasting. Ramadan is the name for one of the holiest Islamic months and is the ninth month in the Islamic lunar calendar. The rising of the sun marks the beginning of fasting and Muslims are allowed to break it after sunset. Now let's see how Afghans break their fasts when the sun sets. The approval for every Muslim to break their fast is Azan-e-Maghrib, or the call for the sunset prayer. That is why almost all Muslims first do their sunset prayers before breaking their fast, which is called iftar. However, iftar time is a specific time for Afghans, as they traditionally and religiously get together at their homes or at restaurants. The gatherings are called iftari. There are special dishes and drinks in the Afghan food culture for iftari.
Iftar time is very important to our people. We prepare some special dishes and drinks for iftar, such as duk, tea, fresh juices, and some local dishes, including bolani, sambasa, ashak, mantu, qabili, and kebab.
Many here also see the fasting month of Ramadan as a time for boosting their family relations and social ties by inviting others for iftari.
We have many traditions and customs to mark the holy month of Ramadan. For instance, most of us use Ramadan as an opportunity to invite others for iftari. This is based on our religious and traditional beliefs that, of course, strengthen our social ties.
In the meantime, there are also poor people who are in urgent need of food and shelter during the holy month of Ramadan. Our religion teachings urge Muslims to support them as part of duties of a fasting Muslim. Therefore, some individuals and charity groups set up food distribution programs for poor families during the holy month. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
COVID-1 vaccine was proved safe during the first phase of the human trials, and now the second stage suggests it also provides effective immunity against the coronavirus. Produced by the headquarters for the execution of Imam Khomeini's order, COVID-1 was injected to 280 volunteers in the second clinical stage, and the results were reported to the health ministry.
We passed the first and second clinical stages, and in the next 2 days, we will report the results of the second phase to the regulatory bodies. So far, we have achieved promising results as to the efficiency of the vaccine. Once this phase is complete, we can then speak with certainty about the exact percentage of the vaccine's efficiency.
Once the second phase is over and the vaccine is proved effective against the coronavirus, the third and final stage will then be initiated, which involves giving the jabs to 20,000 volunteers. Coviron authorities say they have already issued the call for voluntary injections since time is running short.
Based on international standards, if a vaccine gives at least 50% immunity against the virus, it is viable and can be mass-produced. We are confident from our lab tests that Coviron is effective and can generate significant number of antibodies, so we have already issued a call for volunteers to study its efficacy on a larger statistical population.
The first phase of the clinical trial was carried out in December last year, which proved that the vaccine is safe and will not cause any side effects. Other than Coviron, Iran is working on 7 other homegrown vaccines, including Covpars, which is now undergoing the first phase of the human trials. This as the country has already started vaccination of the most vulnerable groups, mainly using Russia's Sputnik V.
Coviron is already ahead in the race compared to other Iranian local vaccines. Now as the fourth wave of the pandemic is sweeping the country, Coviron developers say they're making their utmost efforts to get their jabs to the market within the next 2 months. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Signatories of the Iran nuclear deal end their fifth session in 2 weeks amid efforts to revive the agreement known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA. 2 working groups have been formed, one to draft a list of measures that need to be taken by Iran, and another to outline the sanctions that have to be removed by the US. Now, a third expert group will be working on the matter of sequence. Iran's lead delegate, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, said that would be the focus of talks when they resume next week.
Next week, it's an important question. Is to talk about the sequence, because we have already talked about measures, and we have now focused more on the question of sequence to make sure that the U.S., who has left the JCPOA, should come back first, should lift all its sanctions first, and then Iran would follow after the verification.
Although no direct talks have taken place between Iran and the U.S., the American delegation has been engaged in discussions with the other parties, including Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China.
The top priority remains to focus on sanction lifting. In this particular context, the U.S. must lift all its sanctions, may it concern Iran or any third party, in thorough, complete, and straightforward manner.
Before leaving Vienna for Tehran, Araghchi said Iran does not want to prolong the negotiations, but also needs to take the time to work on every single word that's being drafted to come up with a specific formula, allowing both Iran and the U.S. to come back to full compliance. Iran says the talks are on the right track and moving forward, but as the EU coordinator put it, there's still a lot of work to be done. Omar Lizki, Vienna.
Tensions between the United States and Russia appear to be ratcheting up in recent weeks over a range of issues, including Ukraine. The Russian Defense Ministry on Tuesday accused the U.S. and NATO of engaging in what it described as provocative activities in the waters and airspace of the Black Sea. Moscow also accused Kiev of trying to destabilize the situation in the eastern Donbass region. Amid escalating tensions, Washington and its NATO allies have rallied behind Kiev. They voiced concern over Russia's troop deployment along its borders with Ukraine, claiming Russia might be planning to invade the country. But Moscow said the military buildup was in response to cold, threatening military action by NATO and nothing more. Washington-Moscow tensions heightened after the U.S. administration announced a new array of anti-Russia sanctions last Thursday. The White House claimed the sanctions were in retaliation for a range of Russia's actions, including its alleged meddling in the U.S. election, cyber espionage, and action in Ukraine. The Kremlin responded with tit-for-tat measures.
But the hostile attitude of the U.S. and its allies is not limited to Russia. They have also collectively formed and launched a pressure campaign against China. Just last month, the U.S., along with the European Union, Britain, and Canada, imposed coordinated actions on Beijing under the pretext of human rights violations. The United States and China have also been embroiled in dispute over a host of issues ranging from trade, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. Beijing has time and again accused Washington of seeking to destabilize mainland China by interfering in the affairs of Hong Kong and Chinese Taipei, as well as fomenting tensions in the South China Sea. The country last week escalated its military activities after the U.S. announced it would deploy its warships to the region. The Chinese president on Tuesday also criticized the hegemonic power structures in the global governance, calling for the rejection of such moves.
The future of the world should be mastered by all countries in the world. Rules made by a single country or just a few countries cannot be forcibly applied on others. The world order cannot be led by unilateralism from some country.
The growing tension between Washington on the one side and Moscow and Beijing on the other is bringing the two countries even closer. U.S. President Joe Biden will probably face a nightmare scenario given deepening ties and strategic cooperation between China and Russia, the countries Washington think is a threat to its global interests.
Northern Ireland is bracing itself for more potential trouble. Peaceful pop-up protests across the region in the coming days. An opportunity, some say, to catch police by surprise and block major roads for a time. They follow days of riots and violent clashes earlier this month that plunged the city of Belfast and parts of Northern Ireland into a crisis not seen since the dark days of the Troubles that started in the late 1960s and led to nearly three decades of bloodshed.
There will be protests around the north of Ireland, but what's worrying is that there's a lot of disinformation also. What we're seeing here is a hidden hand and trying to raise tensions between the Catholic and Protestant communities. And when we see this, these things happening, we always have to remember that when there's a void there, extremists fill that void. And when the extremists are there to fill that void, we always see the hidden hand of British security services.
Tensions have been rising since Brexit, which many warn would threaten the Good Friday Agreement of 1998 that put an end to the Troubles. The implementation of the Northern Ireland Protocol allowed the UK to leave the EU without setting up a border on the island of Ireland. Instead, the UK and EU agreed to a customs border between Britain and Northern Ireland. Now, the loyalist and unionist communities who wish to remain under British rule are demanding the protocol be scrapped.
This would seriously destabilize the peace and brought us back to somewhere that was pre-1998 and something that we as a society didn't want to see.
The riots were also fueled by the country's police chief's refusal to resign after a decision not to prosecute Sinn Féin politicians for attending a large funeral last year against COVID restrictions.
I don't see why Simon Byrne would have resigned. I think that he gave his report to those that would have made that decision within the PPS. And, you know, once he has passed that on, there's not much he can do after that. He made recommendations.
Efforts are underway for a political settlement of tensions, including a call for dialogue among all sides from the U.S. president. Still, fears of more unrest and violence are in the air. Saeed Bouriza, London.
The EU's top diplomat, Josep Borrell, updated the bloc's 27 foreign affairs ministers on the latest state of play regarding talks in Vienna to try and save the Iran nuclear deal. He told them that discussions have become less general and more focused, particularly regarding U.S. sanctions against Iran and the Islamic Republic's nuclear energy program.
I talked with Secretary of State Blinken last week when he was in Brussels. I also talked with Minister Sharif. I think that both parts are really interested in reaching an agreement.
Borrell talks about an agreement, but critics say the EU has been much too soft on the US. After all, an agreement was reached in 2015. It was endorsed by the UN. Only the US broke the terms of the accord when Donald Trump took Washington out of the deal almost 3 years ago.
With Iran, we'll see what happens.
Analysts say in those 3 years, the EU, as coordinator of the deal, officially called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, failed to stand up to Trump. Representatives from Iran, Russia, China, France, Britain, Germany, and the European Commission are attempting to preserve the accord during negotiations in the Austrian capital. US officials are there on the sidelines of the talks. Given that the nuclear deal is underpinned by UN Resolution 2231, the vast majority of diplomats agree it should be respected.
We are 193 member states of the United Nations. Of course, the United States, as you've rightly pointed out, is a powerful member state, but they are a member state. And so we need to rally the numbers against those that may have different opinions.
Some citizens we've been talking to say Tel Aviv is behind efforts to derail the nuclear agreement.
Israel have interest and Israel are kind of pushing America.
Frankly, what we need is more peace and not more warmongering.
Tehran insists the only way the issue can be resolved is if Washington lifts all of its illegal sanctions. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
He has imposed more tight restrictions to fight the spread of the coronavirus. Earlier, Turkish president said that the daily lockdown during the first 2 weeks of the holy month of Ramadan will start at 7 p.m. instead of 9 p.m. The lockdown will last till 5 a.m. every day, as the weekend lockdown will continue with stricter measures and more police officers present in the streets to make sure citizens and residents are abiding by the rules. During the weekend, security forces in all 81 provinces were out to make sure people are not violating the lockdown. Tourists are the only ones allowed to be outside during the lockdowns. In Istanbul alone, some 20,000 policemen took part in this campaign. Turkish Interior Minister threatened to punish those who do not respect the rules.
We will be out with our full force. Foreigners with residency permits are also subjected to restrictions and lockdowns, and they have to obey the rules just like others. I have the authority to revoke the residency permits of those who try to exploit the situation, pretending to be tourists. We will not let this happen.
The death toll in Turkey surged last month when restrictions were relaxed. Some blame the people who didn't act responsibly. Others blame the government for taking decisions based on the economic needs of the country rather than what is better for people's health. Analysts believe the government must take stricter measures. However, it is the economic situation that is preventing it from doing so.
The government is doing its best against the pandemic, but unfortunately the cases are rising because the country cannot afford full closure of businesses. Therefore, semi-closure is the only solution, and people must be more responsible.
Turkish Health Ministry said 20 million vaccine jabs have been distributed across the country. This is as Turkey says it has potentially developed a vaccine that just entered the phase of human trials. Turkish Industry and Technology Minister Mustafa Varank has volunteered for the trials. Turkish government wants to welcome tourists again after the holy month of Ramadan. However, many believe it is still too soon for this step, as only 25% of citizens have been vaccinated. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
After mass scenes of a failed security operation against thousands of protesters demanding the expulsion of French ambassador from Pakistan, the public resentment pitched high when the police launched operation against the protesters in the eastern city of Lahore. At the heart of public outrage is the revoking of a 6-month-old agreement by the government with Tehreek-e-Labbaik Pakistan, or the TLP, a political and religious group. The TLP championed the cause to expel French ambassador over a repeated incident of blaspheming of Muslim Prophet Muhammad and their official patronage by the French government. The TLP supporters allegedly attacked a police station in Lahore and kidnapped 11 policemen, including a senior official. Later on, the protesters released all the police officials. The police says an oil tanker with over 50,000 liters of fuel was also taken away by the protesters, which caused ripples within the corridors of power of its possible explosion. A strong public reaction once again forced the government to halt its security operation. There were countrywide wheel jam strike and closure of businesses after many opposition parties and other religious groups announced to support the TLP's demand to expel French ambassador.
How long we would put up with incidents like burning of Holy Quran? How long we would put up with blasphemy being committed against our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him? But now we have decided not to tolerate it any longer.
Alarmed by public backlash, Prime Minister Imran Khan struggled hard in his live address to the nation to calm down public anger.
When Muslim countries stand up together and collectively boycott trade with France over blasphemy incidents, then it would have an impact. I would lead this campaign internationally now to prevent incidents of blasphemy.
Pakistan banned TLP last week, declaring it a terrorist organization in a country where violence against the police has become a norm by almost all major political parties to press their demands.
The government has resumed negotiation with the TLP, which is not ready to settle down on anything short of the expulsion of French ambassador from Pakistan. Now the TLP seems to be on a far more strong footing after a failed security operation against them. Therefore, analysts believe that the government is also running out of options but to withdraw its decision to ban it. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
The factory in the south of Tehran, where a new vaccine named Osvit would be produced within a few months to immune people against the deadly coronavirus. The name is taken from the pharmaceutical company that is developing the vaccine in collaboration with a knowledge-based firm. The joint project will soon be tested on humans to be mass-produced in the capital, Tehran.
Given that the initial phases of the Osvit 19 are completed and the early stages, including the animal phase, were carried out on rats and monkeys successfully, we need to launch this mass production line, and now we are prepared.
I asked the officials whether the formula is imported from other countries or it is indigenous, and this was the answer.
Not even a single word of the 420-page project of the vaccine has been non-native. It's fully developed in Iran. We took samples from the first patients at the beginning of the pandemic. Then it was characterized, inactivated, and cultivated. The job has been a very complicated teamwork and totally indigenous.
Right now, the company is producing the vials, and as the manager said, they can produce up to 6,000 every hour. They also told us that there is a capacity to produce about 20 million doses of the jab in a year. After the official ceremony in which the vial was unveiled, the vice president for science and technology launched the production line.
Within the past few years, very good things have been achieved in the domain of vaccine production in the country. This year, we have several corona vaccines to be mass-produced. This vial production line is a very important infrastructure for other companies that are developing the vaccine.
The Osvit vaccine must be injected in two stages with a three-week interval.
Iran says the second phase of vaccination against COVID-19 will begin in early May, and at this stage, about 15 million people would be vaccinated against the coronavirus. To this end, the country needs about 30 million doses of the vaccine, out of which a great number will be homemade ones. Fuman Abedi, Tehran.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
Here's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Back to Reality, with me, Muhammad Javad. Along with me, sitting Sister Zainab and Brother Ayman. Let me ask them actually to introduce themselves to us or to the dear audience. Brother Ayman.
Thank you very much. My full name is Sayyid Ayman Rizvi, and I have been studying in Hosa in the city of Qom. I'm living here for like last 8 years.
Right.
So, alhamdulillah, I'm doing my master's at the moment right now.
Great.
Thank you.
In Qom?
Yes, in Qom, yes.
Okay. And this is Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah to you, to my other brother, and our dear listeners. I'm Zainab. I'm not used to this position, but yeah.
Okay. Great. Since we are in the month of God, in the month of Ramadan, Ramadan Kareem, right? Let's start with a couple of questions which is related to Ramadan and fasting. Brother Ayman, let me start with you this episode, and I'll shift it to Sister Zainab later on, okay?
Sure.
If Ramadan, if this month was a person, what would you expect this person to appear? What would it be like?
Thank you very much. I think it's a question related to a phenomena called tadseem amal. You know, in the day of judgment, every action of human being would come in a shape of human being, probably, mm-hmm. or some sort of a shape. It would be there so that people can recognize, such as namaz and
Salah,
prayers and prayers, other things. Yeah. So if we can just imagine, what kind of existence would be Ramadan if it would be like a person, I think it would be very physically fit, first of all, because it will be fasting, of course. It would be good looking, I think.
Yeah. Not fat, free basically
yes, free from diseases, but from the spiritual perspective, I think I would say that since Ramadan is to take away all of the pollutions from your spirit and also from your body, so I think it would be a existence which would seem like a very obedient to God,
mm-hmm.
and free from all the pollutions, and again, as I said, illuminating. This is how I imagine. I don't know.
Okay.
It's a tough question,
Yes, it is, actually. So, Zainab, any thoughts on the personality and the appearance and disappearance?
Well, we constantly talk about how the holy month of Ramadan is a month of mercy and forgiveness, and how the gates of paradise are open to the servants of Allah. And I was reading a really interesting interesting commentary regarding this quote, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has his mercy upon his servants all the time, but during the month of Ramadan, it's kind of like he's pushing you through that door, giving you small excuses, big excuses, reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Left, right, and center for you to reach salvation and for you not to lose hope. So if I were to embody that into a person, personify it and imagine it with limbs and eyes and ears, and my imagination might be going wild right now, but I feel like this is Rasulullah,
uh-huh.
a person who is limitlessly merciful, who's constantly looking for excuses to forgive you, to pardon you, to accept you, to bring you in, to give you the inspiration to better yourself. Someone who is filled with love and compassion and affection and sympathy. Because the month of Ramadan isn't just about eating or not drinking, right? It's about being charitable. It's about being more considerate toward the people around us. It has a sense of community to it. And when I think about all these attributes, I'm like, that's Prophet Muhammad. I don't know whether there is a correlation.
Have you seen the image of Prophet Muhammad that you are so confident of talking about, a person with this kind of persona and personality? Good looking, charitable, and this stuff.
I think when you love someone so much, you kind of just behold them with your heart, Even if he lived 1,400 years ago and you've never seen them with your eyes, but every attribute within him is like the epitome of human morals and ethics and values. You're constantly talking about the holy month of Ramadan, about being the best of the months and being full of barakah and bounties and blessings. And now the hypothetical question is to like put it in human form, and it's like 2 + 2 = Ma Ramadan. The month of Ramadan looks like Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. I don't know if that makes sense, but when I let my imagination go wild on it, I'm like, Rasulullah is a personification of everything that's wonderful. And the month of Ramadan is everything that's wonderful.
You know, most of us have some kind of encounter or experience of a person close up, like our grandfather, for example, all right, or grandmother, with a certain type of characteristics.
Yeah.
All right. And this is what we normally remember when we think of something which is a little bit far away from us, all right? We try to liken it, or we try to close it like to that kind of image that we have already in our mind. It is existing, but we compare it with something which is non-existing for us, at least not in a vivid form, all right? So would you consider that to be like a person, or similar to a person that you have in mind?
I've never met my grandfathers, unfortunately. They passed away long before I was born.
I see. Okay, how about you, Brother Ayman?
Well, I don't think I can relate it to my relatives. I think it's somewhere between, you know, the Prophet Muhammad and between my relatives, you know, because relatives, again, they are human beings. And now what we are talking about here is something, you know, illuminating. So it's not about the physical world, because if that, if the Ramadan would come into a human form,
yes,
we cannot say that it's a physical thing. It's probably a, you know, metaphysical being. So if it's metaphysical, then it's, of course, it's something illuminating, something very powerful, something really have a special kind of a charm. And again, I don't think I can relate it to, you know, as the sister said, that, you know, as like a Prophet Muhammad. I think Prophet Muhammad is much greater. His imagination is much greater than even the existence of Ramadan. So I think it's somewhere between that, you know, line.
All right. Since it's a good thing that you mentioned the physical form, why do we have to actually liken it to a person? Related to my first question at the beginning of this episode, do we have any other like form that we can liken it to, like, I mean, the month of Ramadan to?
I think none other than light, you know, because when we see that some artists portray the, you know, imaginative, you know, beings of prophets or Imam Ali or Hazrat Abbas, as we see in Iran mostly, we usually see that there is a light coming out of from their face, right? So much light.
And their face is not
some
fear.
Artists don't follow that, but you know, in Pakistan and India, you can't do that. You can, you cannot just bring the real face of a being. You know, it would be a very hard because as we have brought up, and as we have seen, you know, understood the concepts of prophets, you know, that they are like illuminating beings. They are like, you know, always like there is a light coming out of, you know, from their face, from the faces. So I think the light is the only thing which comes to my mind as, you know, if I, you know, like to imagine imagine them in my mind. But the human forms are basically to give you an idea that, you know, because we are familiar with the human forms so much, because we have a relationship with them, you know, and we love each other, and, you know, we have different kinds of communications with them, so that we are more familiar with the human existence and human form. I think that's why we like to portray some other things also in the form of, you know, human body. So I think that's the reason.
All right. Sister Zainab, Brother Ayman was talking about this kind of metaphysical being. What kind of characteristics would you expect that being to possess?
Metaphysical beings, at the end of the day, are still like abstract to our minds. All we've done is only heard of their descriptions, whether it's in holy scriptures or like off someone else's imagination. I'm still very keen on imagining the month of Ramadan as a human being, because that's, I think, the most relatable form of existence we can think